You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web. This podcast is sponsored by this.labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's this.co/labs.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Web Podcast. My name is Deanna Levitt, and I'll be one of your hosts today. I am a This.Dot member, and I actually oversee planning the podcast and the Modern Web event. So it's really exciting to be on this today. It's also really exciting to talk about tech diversity with our wonderful ladies joining us. We have Tara Manixik. Hi, Tara.
Hello.
I'll let you introduce yourself.
So I'm Tara. I am a developer advocate for Progress and a Google developer expert on web technologies. And I spend most of my time speaking around the world at conferences, talking about everything from JavaScript, Angular, React, Vue, Progressive Web Apps, IoT, GraphQL, and about how all of these things basically can be used with Kendo UI, our components. So I spend a lot of time in the field and seeing the many different faces of our communities. And I'm also the founder and director for Cincinnati Women Who Code, and the director for Cincinnati Node School branch here in Cincinnati. So the community means a ton to me, and making sure we are very inclusive to see more and more new faces of every different shade and age and gender join our communities is very important to me. So I'm excited to be here to talk about diversity with you all.
Awesome. Happy to have you here. We also have Sarah Fetterman with us today. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Sarah Fetterman. I'm a design engineer at Adobe. So I kind of live in the bridge between design and development, and I mostly work on front end stuff. So I do a lot of React and HTML, CSS kind of things. I'm also a teacher for Girl Develop It in San Francisco, and I do some conference speaking. Most recently, I was at Web Directions in Australia. I'm really excited to talk about diversity today. And one of the things that I'm focusing on right now is inclusive design in my job. So it's really exciting to be able to explore that part of it.
Awesome. Thanks for joining. Speaking of speaking at conferences, we have FluentConf coming up, and I understand both of you are going to be speaking at that.
Yeah, we're excited.
Nice. So what topics are you going to be covering?
So I'm going to be covering the basics of inclusive design and kind of how to become a champion of it at your company. Mm-hmm. And it's just the idea that every product should be usable by everybody, regardless of their situation or disability or any sort of thing that makes them a little bit different needs for them. And like, providing the correct context for them. So,
what about you, Tara?
So I am going to be speaking on progressive web apps. It's the title of the talk, it doesn't need to be a progressive web app. And it basically covers what a progressive web app is, and what are the strengths that you can get out of being a progressive web app, what applications or projects may or may not need to be a progressive web app, and talks about kind of how we got to this point, what we needed in describing what progressive web apps were and what technologies they bring to us for our applications. And that's at 9:50 in the morning on the Thursday. And I think it will be a very interesting talk, because at the end I try to go through each different framework. I go through just a very quick intro and live code how to start a progressive web app in Angular, Vue, and React. which actually kind of shows you the things that you need to make any application you have a progressive web app. So we decide if your application actually needs to be a progressive web app, and if it does, we'll show you how to make it one.
That's awesome. So jumping back into tech diversity, what would you say for each of you, what is like the biggest issue that you hope to ever overcome? What topics do you think are the most pertinent right now?
Well, I would say just in general, there are a lot of different underrepresented groups. And it would be great to see more people in the industry feel welcome to come and join the communities. And, you know, with conferences especially, I think that we need to see more people on stage being represented. But then the question is, what are the different ways that we can make them? Like, I'm pretty tired of people saying, oh, well, you know, not these people didn't apply, and just putting it on the shoulders of the underrepresented groups to be the ones to take the action to find somebody's conference out there, when it's just like, if we want to have more people on stage, what are the actions we can take as people who, you know, may help organize conferences or know people that organize conferences to get more of these groups present and in front of people? So that is most on my mind because I'm at conferences so much. So I think that's one of the first things that I would like to see happen is basically find a way to get more underrepresented groups on stage and at conferences.
Yeah, totally. One of the things that's really kind of I've been thinking about lately is just like the ethics of the products that we've built recently. Like the biggest products that we have out there are, you know, Facebook and Google and all of these kinds of like huge algorithmically driven products. And like when we have teams that build those things that aren't diverse, we end up with situations like when Google Photos labeled all the photos of Black people as gorillas. And like, that would never happen if a diverse team was behind that. Like, so that's one of the things that I really feel strongly that like companies have a business and ethical responsibility to make diverse teams and to do as much as they can to have as many people from as many different backgrounds and perspectives as they can.
That's funny that you say that about the Google pictures, because I was actually, this was a few years ago, I was at the airport on the way back from a conference in San Francisco, and in the security line, this person was telling me about their team had made a like 3D scanning rendering project, and they put all this money to market it by getting Wiz Khalifa to come in. And they were so stoked, and they were like, so basically they would scan him and he would be part of the video game. But they just happened to have all white people on the team. So they paid all this money to get Wiz Khalifa to come in, and he came in and their project didn't work on the darker skin tone. So it didn't work at all. And they were just like, oh, we did not think about that. And there's a documentary called Code, Debugging the Gender Gap. They talk about different things that we've done for a long time where we had like seatbelt design made to protect, you know, middle age or like adult male. So all these like women and children were getting injured and dying because they were only doing it for like the weight and the heights of an average male. So it's just like, you know, people actually, their lives are at risk. We're at risk by not having a diverse team to even think about the other people who are involved in these things. But I'm curious, Sarah, like, I don't want you to have to say your whole talk, but what are some kind of like bullet points that you would say for just starting to make your projects more inclusive?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, start with having an inclusive team. Like the products always reflect the bias of the people that are building them. And especially with like algorithms, people love to blame like the algorithm, but you know, a person programmed that algorithm and that's like, it's only doing what they told it to do. So first of all, like taking responsibility is really important. And then just like just with inclusive design, it's not so much about algorithm design. It's more about like meeting people where they're at and making a good user experience for everybody. But we definitely do try and focus on like even attention span, like somebody who's like a single mom at home and has a baby on her shoulder isn't going to have like a full attention span for your product. They might only have one hand, which suddenly makes them a one-handed user. Like trying to account for situations where like you can't demand like full like range of motion or full attention span, and like just, I mean, like people who have to support their families and have a bunch of stress and stuff on their shoulders, they're going to want as little extra work as possible. So we try and find out ways to do that as best as possible.
That's really interesting. So for the both of you, because I know that especially around Cincinnati, we get this question a lot of, how do we find more applicants, more people to hire who are diverse, or, you know, how do we build a very inclusive team? What are some of the suggestions? I have some answers too, but I want to hear the two of your answers first.
I think the biggest thing is just like value the people that you already have and treat them well, because like women in tech know each other and we talk, and there is a back channel. And if I've heard bad stories about women at your company, I'm never going to apply, let alone respond if you try and recruit me. So just like treating people you have well, promoting people and like showing a history of that will do amazing things. And then just like, don't focus on the pipeline. Just focus on like creating a good environment for the people that are there and the people that are joining. And then your reputation will start to speak for itself in the meantime. And even then, you still have to be actively reaching out to candidates. And there are several ways that people have done that. There's all sorts of like GitHub repos of women in tech. There's like communities that you can reach out to and try and sponsor their events to see if you can recruit there. There's one company tried something, I don't remember what company it was, where they just had all of their referrals. They just asked their employees to refer minorities if they had them. Because like most people just refer who they know, but they don't actually think about all the minorities that they know that might be a really good fit for the job, because it's just not on the top of their mind. So those are some of the things that I've heard about in the past.
I agree with Sarah, pretty much on the same mindset of just like creating an inclusive community, because I know the rate of attrition for minorities, women in the tech industry is much higher than white males. There's got to be a reason for that. So just like with this dot, what we're doing for RX Workshop, we're giving away diversity tickets constantly. So hundreds of thousands and thousands of dollars worth of tickets that we're just giving out free to promote women to learn RxJS and minorities to learn it. And if more companies are doing that, then there's going to be more resources out there for everyone.
I definitely agree with all these things. And it's mind-boggling to me when I hear stories about companies that are especially, because yes, like Sarah said, we do all talk. I mean, like all developers. I mean, most every conference that I go to or anytime I'm at a meetup, we talk about what's happening at our jobs and how we're treated. And if situations aren't good, we will recommend, you know, other developers not go to certain companies. But on the positive side, when you see, even if it's not in talk, if you see in the communities that a company is taking an underrepresented or marginalized group, or like someone who is in one of the, you know, marginalized group, and they're doing a good job, and when they do a good job, they, you know, reward them like they should by, you know, moving them in a position higher up, or promoting them, or representing them in a way that shows that, like, yes, this person did a good job. You know, like, women can code well too. You know, it's like, which is so, such a silly thing to have to say. But we also, like, in, like, with Women Who Code, we're constantly looking for sponsors to sponsor events. And this not only, so what we do in Cincinnati is when we have a sponsor, they will sponsor us at their office. So they get to do a short little spiel on what they're looking for in their company. And there, mind you, there are Women Who Code and Girl Develop It all over the world. So if you think you may have one in your area, look on our websites and you can reach out to our directors for both the organizations. But when you find these groups, we also have like a Cincinnati Women in Tech group that's not only developers, but surrounding fields, like project managers and marketing managers and things surrounding tech. But we bring our groups to do free workshops inside of these offices and let, you know, everybody get to meet each other. So this is a great way for people to learn about each other, learn about different companies, and for you to kind of showcase what you have to offer for all these developers that you're trying to talk to. So, but really you have to walk the walk. Like if you want an inclusive group, like make sure that the current group that you have, you are being inclusive and you are, you know, putting efforts into building an inclusive community, because, you know, you can say you want something, but if you're not taking the actions to prove that it's actually what your company believes in, it shows. It very much shows.
Yeah, a lot of companies kind of treat their diversity efforts as like a Band-Aid solution, where like you have a huge group of people that you started with that are, you know, already white men, and then you try and even out things, and like you have to grow to do that. It's not like you're going to go fire all the people that you already have. So starting out with an inclusive team from the beginning is like a huge indicator about what you value and will attract more people that are minorities or women.
Yeah, I have seen some like comments on social media when people are talking about tech diversity, and like, I mean, it's majority like white men, but they're like, just hire the best developer, like end of story. And like, how do you promote tech diversity without offending people that are saying like, well, why is it about diversity? Why isn't it about just hiring the best developer? And well, it's like, well,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The entire idea that like a minority wouldn't be the best person for the job is like stupid discrimination. It's like, I mean, you hire the best regardless. The bar is set, and like, it's just a matter of getting the right people at the table. And like, that does require extra effort, but it will pay off like 100 times, 1,000 times in the results from your projects. And that's been studied and proven.
Yeah. Because if you're not inviting everyone to the table, there's no chance you're getting the best developer out there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know, it's irritating.
That kind of stuff is like mind-boggling to me. Yeah. So, how did you choose, Sarah? How did you choose Fluent to speak at?
I was actually asked to apply by some of the conference organizers, and before that, I'd gotten a scholarship to go to OSCON, which was really helpful as a diversity applicant. And then last year I hosted a room at Fluent just to get more like confidence speaking in front of a crowd. So I've had really good experiences with the O'Reilly and Fluent community in the past. And this time I just wanted to give it a try. So Kyle Simpson also helped by reviewing my CFP and giving me feedback, which was really, really helpful. He's always been a great sponsor. That's kind of how it went.
Nice. How do both of you feel about the process of people reaching out to speakers to speak at conferences?
I think that's important to promote diversity in general. Like, the conference organizers should definitely have that in mind. Like, they should be reaching out to the most diverse audience of speakers as possible.
Yeah, do it. I mean, like, there's really no excuse. There's about 1,000 databases out there of people who are looking for speaking opportunities, and like, all you have to do is Google it and start reaching out to people and just work your network. I've gotten speaking opportunities just from, like, there was a Twitter thread where people started asking for 1,000 names of women in design, I think. No more all white male panels was like the title or whatever. And they published an article on MIC about it. It was just like a huge database of women's names. And that's how I ended up speaking at the Design Guru Summit. They emailed me. They were like, hey, we saw you on this list. Are you interested in speaking on this panel? It sounds like something that would be up your alley. And they had actually personalized it as well. So they like looked at my LinkedIn and they looked at my resume and they saw that like I was working in enterprise. So they asked me to be on the enterprise panel. So if you can personalize it, it's not always necessary, but like that's just the bare minimum effort.
Well, I think too, like, yes, there is a lot of work that goes into conference organization. I do not doubt that whatsoever. But as far if you're working on you know, selecting speakers for your conference and you're thinking this list is not diverse enough, there is something that you can do about it. And I think that when you, like, there are so many speakers out there, there are so many diverse speakers of tons of different underrepresented groups, and you can't just say, I don't know anybody, because especially as a conference organizer, you know people that know people that know people that know people. And all it takes is, like, we've seen in many, I mean, at least if you're paying attention to kind of like the diversity topic on Twitter, you will see like anytime that there is a question about diverse speakers, people just, like Sarah was saying, throw a bunch of lists out. There are a ton of extremely talented, underrepresented speakers out there. And a lot of times, you know, I speak out of like my own experience. There are tons of conferences that I don't know about. And it's not because I don't care to check out conferences. It's more that I'm spending most of my free time like coding out demos and building content. So I can't just like sit and research conferences all the time. And a lot of conferences I hear about are word of mouth. And I will check through my different channels, like, is this conference good? Has anybody had, you know, really bad experiences with organizers of this conference, or, you know, situations at this conference? So conferences, just like companies, you're representing, like, your, how you represent yourself, you know, your reputation will follow you. So if you do great things and you have a great reputation, you will get more speakers, or speakers that you reach out to will be happy to speak there. But I don't know, how do you all feel about like companies and conferences whose reputations may not be the best, but what are steps that they can take to kind of get out of that hole?
I don't know specifically what I would say to people that have like had bad experiences in the past. Just try and get better every year. It's a work in progress. And the first thing that you need to do is just like acknowledge that it was a mistake and like stop making excuses for yourself. Like,
yes.
it's an instant turn off when you're like, okay, but you have like 38 male speakers, and they're like, well, and it's just ridiculous. So yeah, first, like, just like take accountability. And then there's other things that you can do as well that kind of help get people in the door. 'Cause like a lot of minority speakers, they're first time speakers, and like they usually need some sort of help to get people, or to get their like CFPs in a good place, and like offering some sort of mentorship hour, or like giving all of your CFPs one round of reviews is really, really, really helpful to get new speakers in the door. And you can also anonymize your first round of feedback, or first round of reviews. So like take all of the subjects and the CFPs and just anonymize them. And then in the second round, you bring the names back in and the data so you can know that you're actually choosing a diverse crowd.
That's really great. I actually just was looking at applying to Angular Connect. And one thing that they have on there that I think is fantastic is you can schedule on Calendly with them to basically have a, I think it's like a 15-minute session, because sometimes with CFPs, you don't, you're not really able to get your thought across, especially if you're a new speaker. So they basically set up an interview process with you to help talk to you about your CFP so they get a better understanding of what it is. And I think that's brilliant. Oh, another thing, I have to say this because Asim from Microsoft, you can find him at Jawache on Twitter, J-A-W-A-C-H-E. I should make sure that that's exactly right. But he talked about this on the NGConf stage last week, and I'm just going to spread the word even further because he was saying that he's an amazing speaker. If you haven't seen him speak, I highly recommend it. J-A-W-A-C-H-E. He was telling people that if you need help with CFPs, learning how to speak, especially like underrepresented groups, reach out to him. He's happy to help do a little coaching, help you out. He's given a ton of talks as well, so he's got a lot of experience. Is his, you know, makes it look easy, basically. So he was offering assistance for anybody who's starting out. I am more than happy to help with anybody who is looking to speak more or just get more comfortable on the stage, do CFP overviews and, you know, walkthroughs. And I'm TZMANICS on Twitter. So yes, there are lots of people who want to help get more people at conferences and on stages.
Yeah, I'm also happy to help, though I have a lot less experience than Tara. But
I have way less experience than both of you, so.
And then there are even more people that have less experience than all of us. So we can help in some way. I mean, even just having that ear, you know, even if it's like two people that have never spoken before, you're able to pick up on things, like, you know, to help people out. And always remember that your meetups are great places for you to practice your talks before, because they're always looking for speakers. So
speaking of that, I just had somebody put me in contact with a 10-year-old speaker. He's 10.
Oh,
I thought that
goodness.
Was so amazing. And he had a little picture in his signature. Oh my God. It was so cute.
That doesn't make me feel any better.
I know, it's like Sam too. Like, she just spoke in front of 1,500 people at NGConf. So I'm like,
oh yeah,
I'm way older than you.
Well, I mean, I think that's another interesting topic is, you know, talking about ageism in the tech industry, like from each end of the spectrum, you know, people tend to fall in a certain age group. And when you don't fall in that age group, there's always like, you know, some joke or some way to bring attention to it. I mean, like, it's amazing. I can't imagine a 10-year-old on stage speaking. But that's amazing. But I mean, like, how do you all feel about like different ways to bring more inclusivity for age-wise into companies and into groups? Like, you know, I've had people come in and be like, I'm too old to code, especially at Women Who Code. I have women come through and they're like, well, I'm pretty old, I'm a grandma. And I'm like, yeah, you just finished a boot camp and you made your own, you know, blog and your profile. Like, you can code, obviously. And I don't care what your age is, like, you're obviously coding. Yeah, what all do you think are other ways to kind of make groups more inclusive to age?
Yeah, I totally agree. Coding is not an age-related skill. And like, one of the things that's really helpful is just inclusive design, because like a lot of what we account for is like the varying like level of disability that comes with age, and it's just about representing people. I saw an amazing talk the other day from some designers at Atlassian about like how they made all of their like character drawings, all of their illustrations inclusive by like including all the different like ages and races and genders and like just kind of debunking this image of, you know, like the nerdy white guy in glasses in a cave on his computer. Like if you ever like Google a developer or a programmer on Google Photos, like the first result you'll get is just like some cute like blue guy in like glasses on like a MacBook Pro. And like that image is the thing that we really have to debunk wherever we can. So just like keeping those principles in mind when you're designing from the very beginning is a really important part of just like sending that image out into the world.
It's also like diversity, just like making the web more accessible to people in general, like everyone. Like we have an event coming up that's State of Accessibility. And I was talking with one of the speakers about like colorblindness. And I know some people that are colorblind. It's just like, what ways can we make the web more inclusive to everyone? So that was really interesting for me, I'm not a developer from that standpoint.
8% of men have colorblindness in some form. That's like a huge number. It's crazy.
My boyfriend.
Like it'd be people I've known for years, they just bring it up in conversation now that they know that this is what I'm doing. I'm like, oh yeah, like those are where the numbers come from. But I think it's like not a lot of people really discuss it, which is sad because I think it needs to be more public.
Yeah, to be honest, I never even thought about like how you wouldn't be able to see a lot of the things on the internet had not been somebody creating it to make sure colorblind people or things like that could see it. Until my boyfriend brought it up that he couldn't see something that I saw. I was just like, what? So just thinking about everyone and every background and every disability that somebody might have.
Yeah, it's really important for developers to be on the page with that too, because like somebody had to advocate for all of the accessibility tools and like Chrome developer tools and all of the different like things that support accessibility on the web. Somebody has to advocate for that, and it should be everybody, and like that's the dream, right? But it, for now, the best thing that we can do as developers is advocate for it wherever we can. It's huge. There's a lot of safety stuff.
People, yeah, the more diverse people working in the field, like the more we're going to overcome those types of issues.
So, well, I was just thinking about like back to kind of the communities, like how, what's the best way, or like what are some ways? Obviously there's no best way. There's no immediate answer to all of this. Otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation for the past 15 years. But what are, I'm trying to think of like the best actual action items for people in communities, in companies, in conference organizations, like to make their environments more inclusive, to bring more diversity and inclusion into. So let's just start with like development. Like we were talking a bit about development teams. Like what are some other strategies to bring in more diverse applicants for your jobs? Because I know I've been trying to help people and women who code go through the application processes. And some of them, like even just reading some of these applications where basically you're saying, like I think we've all heard of those horrible ones that you see from recruiters. It's like, we're looking for a coder who's a rock star and he can solve any problem put in front of him. And you're like, ah, you just dropped the ball on that one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Well, the first thing you could do is just like run sentiment analysis on all your job descriptions. So you can actually like use the tooling and use like the algorithms that tell you when you sound like you're talking to men or females. And like, it's super important. It also, there's a level of empathy. I think Alex is one of the ones that does this. I'm not positive that's the correct name, but we always run our job descriptions through there as well, which is really awesome. And then the other thing that it's just like, you have to have a sense of belonging, because like, it doesn't matter if your numbers are up, but like, people will leave if they don't feel like they're being valued and they feel like they belong. So having an employee resource group is really, really cool. Just like having an internal, like the any sorts, women in tech, like even like smaller than that, like Black women in tech or Latina women in tech. There's all sorts of opportunities to create communities and have minorities feel like they belong in your company.
What are the resources that you said earlier? I don't like, and where can people find them if you know off the top of your head? If not, I can give you Google time or searching time. Sorry, I won't be biased.
So I think the I was just saying that it was a center, an employee resource group. So just like having an internal group and then using a sentiment analysis tool on your job descriptions. Just give me a second to Google it and talk.
In the meantime, like, I feel like it's worth reminding people, because like Sarah was saying about the attrition rate, There are a few studies done. I actually did a talk about this, and I wish I had pulled up all my stats on this. But there are a few studies done that actually showed even the kind of feedback that was given per employee based on their specified gender was different. I mean, so it's basically this implicit bias that exists where you will handle employees different ways. So, and it's a big problem, and it's it's not the easiest thing to just immediately get rid of. But one of the first steps you can take is being aware of your implicit bias. And there are actually, I think it's Harvard Business School or somewhere on Harvard's site. I'll link it somewhere related to this video once it's posted. But there's an implicit bias survey that you can do to see where your biases lie. And that's a great first step. And like how you handle your employees is knowing where you are biased.
Yeah, implicit bias training is really, really, really fundamental. It's just when you join, do the training. Same when you do, like as part of the onboarding process, like you do your security training, you do your like technical training, you do your implicit bias training. Like that's just how it works. And then the thing that I was talking about was Textio. It's spelled T-E-X-T-I-O. And it's just a text analysis tool. So you just drop in your job description and it will give you data on like how you're doing, you like your tone. Are you using a very masculine tone? Are you like using corporate cliches? Like all sorts of data there that's really, really valuable.
Oh man, I feel like we need that on some of our blog posts. In my and another thing that a lot of people, I believe, don't always think of because it's such ingrained in the tech industry is drinking. Like you do have a chance of excluding people based on, you know, like if every event you have is a beer and blank session. So just remember to like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love bourbon. So I always have to remind myself like, yeah, not every event has to have alcohol, like has to be at a brewery, has to be somewhere where there's alcohol, so that more people feel more included. And also that you just don't need to have alcohol at every event. So just like a reminder that like when you do a team activity at work, like maybe it's just at, you know, a place where there's no alcohol, or it's just like at a, you know, a park where you have like food out there and whatnot. But I think that we don't think about that too often because it's kind of ingrained in our industry to, you know, have kegs at the office.
Yeah. One woman I was speaking to told me they were like a little bit uncomfortable at a local meetup because like the local meetup had only provided beer. And they like didn't provide wine or any sort of like alternative, and it felt very targeted towards people who drink beer, which are statistically mostly men.
I think these are just kind of small things that can become, you know, a big way for you to be more inclusive, to like, you know, just like steps, small steps that you can make. And I think that that's important right now, is to remember that, like, you know, like Sarah was saying earlier, it's not an overhaul. You don't have to just completely change everything immediately, but start to make small steps to make people feel more inclusive. And I think the more comfortable people feel, the better they talk about the company, the better reputation your company and your team has, and which will make it more inviting to more underrepresented groups.
I have a little fact here. It says, in addition, Black and Latino tech workers are more likely than others to leave the industry within a decade. And nearly half of women of all races also leave within 10 years. The rate of attrition for men on the same time scale is 17%. So that was from last year, from the New Yorker. So it's interesting.
Don't talk about the pipeline until you solve that.
Yes, totally. And there's a lot of proponents to this. Like, they did studies where, you know, women weren't getting, women and underrepresented groups weren't getting brought up for the raises because a lot of times the people in charge were white men and they went to help, you know, and again, implicit bias, they want to help out people that look like them. So they were, you know, pulling more white men up the ranks. And it's not, hopefully it wasn't completely a malicious plan, but it just happens to be, you know, how you're thinking is wired at the time. Not that that's an excuse, but it's more of a push for people in those positions of power to remember to check their thinking, to remember, like, actually go over all the employees that they have under them, think about each person that's there, and really run the numbers, like, really think about everybody that's there and be smarter about your decisions. Be more critical in your decision making, hopefully. Also, I feel like this, sometimes some things that seem so obvious need to be said. But I've worked at so many places, been around so many groups where it's just like, you don't need to make fun jokes about race and gender and sexual preference. That does not ease the tension. That does not need to come up. People don't need to say these things. I'm always surprised when I'm in groups and meetups and stuff, and people think they're easing the tensions, showing that they're comfortable with these different topics by making like slight jokes about it. It's like, you don't need to do that. I just have to say it somewhere because I think it needs to be out there somewhere.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we talk about a lot is just like mentoring people that are like underrepresented minorities. And like, apart from mentorship, the next step is really just like sponsorship, which is just like, instead of like telling this person like all these like things that they should do, or like helping them with their project, it's, you know, bringing it up, or like giving them credit whenever they can, like when there's a new opportunity for a speaker, being like, hey, I know this woman, she's really, really awesome. Like, just really putting them out there instead of yourself. And I personally believe that this should be part of like your requirements for promotion for higher levels. Like, you need to be showing mentorship and leadership skills and sponsorship skills in addition to that. It's like, there's so many like brilliant, brilliant white male developers that are out there, and they're very high level engineers, but they treat everybody around them like crap. And I don't think that they should be high level if they treat people like crap. It's like, that doesn't make you a good engineer. So like, mentorship and leadership and have to go hand in hand with promotion, especially when you have like people in lower levels that are underrepresented minorities.
And that does great things for your team too. Like having somebody that you have, you know, respected their work enough to hire them as one of your senior or mid-level engineers, passing their knowledge down to more people on the team obviously helps your company. But also, like Tracy Lee was just talking about this week, how she's always like very great about sticking up for herself and like letting people know where they may have, you know, done something wrong, especially with diversity. But even sometimes on top of that, like she was saying, it's great to have allies speak up, because unfortunately sometimes the voice at the table that gets heard isn't, you know, isn't the one that said the thing. So, well, I've talked to many different people who, and I've been in this situation where we'll have an idea for a project or a, you know, engineering solution for something, and I'll say something, and it's not until, you know, one of my male colleagues says, well, what Tara said was a good idea that we do this, that it gets heard by the whole group. So it's always good to remember as an ally to any underrepresented group that sometimes they need that extra voice in the situation as well.
Yeah, and like with that too, sometimes you get into these situations where you say something and like people follow it up and like the conversation keeps going and then somebody ends up revisiting it. And like they're not trying to like steal your idea, but when you say, you don't like say, I agree with the person that said it originally, people will just automatically attribute that to you because that's their implicit bias talking again. So you have to be very deliberate about giving the credit to the person that originally like talked about it.
Definitely.
So was there anything else you ladies wanted to say today? I think we're getting to that time.
I would just like to reiterate that Girl Develop It, Women Who Code, other organizations like that, and all your user groups are always looking for donations and sponsorships. And I know Women Who Code in particular, we always try to find underrepresented instructors and teachers. So if you are, like especially with Women Who Code, we love to put women up on the podium to show other women that this is, like, you can do this. This is a thing you can do. Give them a role model. Give them someone to look up to. And most importantly, someone to learn from. So if you are a woman in tech, any kind of expertise that you think you can lend to Women Who Code groups, we're always very, very happy to have you. And just in general, if you're from an underrepresented group and are looking for any kind of mentorship or looking to be mentors, like shout it out from the hilltops, because it's always great to see more awesome people in tech.
Thank you. All right, Sarah, is there anything else you wanted to say? I'm going to let everyone know about a Fluent Conference discount that we have for listeners.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's been awesome.
Thank you for joining. So as we said, Sarah and Tara will be giving talks at the upcoming FluentConf. It's happening June 11th, June 14th in San Jose. And our special discount code is for 20% off of your gold, silver, or bronze passes. And the code is M-O-D-E-R-N, modern. So if anyone wants to get those tickets, they should go see Sarah and Tara talk.
Yeah, come join us. We'll go out for non-alcohol beverages. I'm just kidding.
I'll be drinking alcohol. Tara will not be.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for listening to the Modern Web Podcast. You can find us online at modern.web.com. That's modern.web.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at modern.web.
What's Sarah's Twitter handle?
Oh, yeah.
My Twitter handle is Sarah_Federman.
Yeah, we can't forget about ourselves. mine's at Deanna Levitt, DeannaLevitt. And Tara's is TZ Manix, right?
Yep, everywhere. Everywhere I am TZ Manix.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Let's go, 'cause we got a show for you.